Hello and welcome to AIPT Comics Podcast, episode 29. We've been here over half the year talking about comic books, comic book news, reviewing comics, having comic book creators on the show, and talking about comics. Did I say that yet? I am not talking about comics alone, though. I'm here with my co-host, Forrest Hollingsworth.
Hello, I'm Forrest with two R's, and I've been Banksy the whole time.
Wait a minute, did we talk about that last week?
Maybe. Maybe that's why it's in my head. I'll tell you what I know. Okay. McDonald's bad. Poor people not smart. Phones bad. Banksy.
Oh, was that a Banksy piece?
That was the first verbal Banksy piece.
Well, this is a pretty big show because we've got two events circling AIPTcomics.com, our website, and also circling the show, because Spider Month is now 2 weeks in the book, and then we've got San Diego Comic Con coming up in 4 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. So we're going to have next week is going to be a cross-pollination of events, one might say. I don't know if they would actually say that. So in this show, we're going to be talking a little bit about San Diego Comic-Con. I'll be going as press, covering it for AIPTcomics.com. And we'll be talking a little bit about what I'll be doing, but also some of the panels that I would recommend if you're lucky enough to be going to San Diego Comic-Con. Also, we're going to be talking about Spider-Man.
Yeah. So, I like that transition because that's how 90% of my face-to-face conversations in real life go. And also funny. Now I'm going to talk about Spider-Man.
But we're at the doctor, Forrest. What? So yeah, we're going to have a special segment on Spider-Man and maybe his villains. I'm not going to spoil it, but...
Ooh, yeah. It's hard to tell.
I can't spoil the show for you guys because I know you guys like to listen to this hour 15 long show every time.
And, I know you're going to listen to the whole show, everyone.
This show always starts with talking about the news because at the top of the show, we want to talk about the top things that are probably on your mind, or if not, they need to be.
They should be.
In the top bit of news, I don't know if this is the top bit of news, but in a big piece of news, do you know what TMNT stands for?
Toyota Montgomery... Naked taco. Yeah.
Green animals.
Yeah, green is one of
that
them.
That are shelled.
Yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Here's in a half shell turtle power. There's a new female turtle named Jenica that has been revealed by IDW.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first female turtle because there was that cartoon recently, semi-recently.
Yeah, Venus de Milo first appeared in September 1997 in Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation.
Oh my god, it was that long ago? God, yeah. I'm old, yeah, man. Damn it. Well, Jenica is pretty awesome because she's trying to pull off a Wolverine because she's got claws.
Yeah.
I guess they're kind of like glued to her hand. Not glued, I don't know. Sashayed? What is the word? And her color of choice is yellow.
Yes.
So are you hyped for this? Do you read Ninja Turtle comics? I don't.
So Ninja Turtles was the first comic I ever read.
Get out.
I grabbed some off of like a penny rack at the grocery store when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was super into it. I don't think it was Eastman. It was some other stuff. But yeah. I was super, super into it. And I have like a soft spot in my heart for them. But I'm also not caught up on any of the new stuff. This character is debuting in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 95. And she's the secondary leader to the Foot Clan, who is in need of a blood transfusion after being stabbed by a resentful Kyari. However, Leonardo's mutant blood causes the human girl to transform, similar to the four ninja brothers. She's also in love with Casey.
Hold on.
There's a lot happening there.
Leonardo's blood turns her into a turtle?
Yeah.
So this is the Captain Marvel origin story that everyone hates and says it's chauvinistic.
It's She-Hulk. Yeah.
Oh, that too. But remember in Captain Marvel, his particles get shot into her.
Yep.
Oh my God.
As I was saying, have this fondness and this soft spot for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I always have. But I'm not really caught up on it. And when I read something like that, I'm like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I think it's really, really cool that there's going to be a full-time female turtle. I also think it's really, really weird that they're acting like it's the first one.
Maybe it's the first for the comics.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I watched the cartoon in the late 80s, in the early 90s. That was my era, so that's how I got into it. And I also, I still remember finally the Leonardo action figure was super rare, and I didn't think I'd get it, and I got it. So I thought, oh, obviously Santa's real. And since that day, I write him letters.
Give yourself a blood transfusion with that toy and see what happens.
I should. In other news, have you read Grand Design, X-Men Grand Design?
I have, and I loved it.
It's a really cool like mashup where he's taken the entire history of the X-Men and basically shoved it into only a handful of issues.
Yeah, I think it's total four. I know it was originally two, but they extended it. And they ended up doing Ed Piskor, the artist and writer on that, ended up doing like Extinction Agenda and later stuff. So I know it's at least four issues. It may be six. I'm not sure.
It's a cool series. If you've read his previous series, Hip Hop Family Tree from Fantagraphics, you will know he's very good at sort of recounting history. So it made sense in a lot of ways for him to do this X-Men series. Well, anyway, there's another Grand Design coming, and it's Fantastic Four.
Yes.
And I believe you, Forrest, wrote the news about this.
Yeah, I kind of wrote up the news, and it's over on AAPTcomics.com because I didn't expect this at all. But I guess in hindsight, it makes so much sense, right? So they have a one-man artist-author team doing this, and it's Tom Scioli, who's done Godland, GoBots, and Transformers versus G.I. Joe. It's going to be out in October. Tom released a 45-minute video on YouTube talking about it. And I kind of like a creator that's that excited about any project, really. The stories are going to focus on the most popular Fantastic Four stories, quote unquote. So I'm assuming that's like the origin story and maybe like Dr. Doom and stuff like that. They're also going to loop in the first debuts of characters like Black Panther and the Inhumans, which originally debuted in Fantastic Four books as well. I think it's really, really cool. I didn't expect Grand Design to continue, and this feels like a natural follow-up. I like that they are continuing with artists and creators that have this very nostalgic style.
It's definitely like an old school feel.
Right, yeah. And even the covers look very, very intentionally patinaed. And stuff,
I mean, look at the one of the covers that's on the site is Thing, and it's totally homage to Frank Miller's Batman.
Yes, and Ed Piskor did that variant cover for the book. So
I really liked his Godlands when it was coming out. God, how long ago was it now? 15 years ago? It was very Kirby-esque, so it makes a lot of sense for him to be doing Fantastic Four, I think. I don't know if the Fantastic Four's history isn't quite as convoluted as the X-Men, so
sure,
it's probably an easier task. Not to say that it's, you know, it's easier or harder or whatever, but like to disseminate it all into a shorter series will probably be easier. Who would you like to see another Grand Design focused on?
I mean, I think that, and I'm not just saying this because I'm the coordinator of
Spectacular Spider-Man. Here we go again.
But I do feel like Spider-Man has enough history and enough like interesting twists and turns and villains and stuff that it would make for a very good one. I don't see that working for another character like, I don't know, Iron Man.
Right.
The Hulk could also probably work. There are definitely some that I'm very, very interested in. What about you?
Speedball, for sure. Speedball. actually, that would actually not be a very bad. It would only be one issue, but I reviewed the Speedball Complete Collection a couple of weeks ago for AAPT, and he is a wild first 12 issues. And then if you then think about the Penance turn for him, that'd be a really wild single issue, because he goes from like cheery young boy who gets powers to a dude who killed a school of children. And reacts in the most horrible way by hurting himself.
And I kind of feel like the Grand Design books are so good at poking fun at themselves or poking fun at the stories that they're aping.
Yeah.
So I do feel like when you have a character that is that ridiculous or like a sudden left turn into like complete and total darkness, it's fun to make fun of that, right? Without saying, in such a reverent way that you're still saying, I like this, but from the outside, it's ridiculous.
It's a way to celebrate comics. And let's all be clear here. The golden and silver ages were pretty wacky.
Yeah. I think that, I guess I also just came across Daredevil would work really well. And that's because you had a lot of really famous artists and writers on Daredevil.
Sure.
I was thinking recently about the really famous scene where Bullseye stabs Elektra through the chest in Frank Miller's run of Daredevil when he was the artist on Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
So I can totally see like really iconographic stuff coming out of Daredevil or the Hulk or Spider-Man.
Yeah, I like the idea of it continuing. I never thought it would, you know. I always thought it was just Ed Piskor's thing, but it's cool that they're picking it up and giving it to other artists to show their skills at summarizing the history of a group or a team.
Yeah.
In our next bit of news, anyone read Weapon Plus, or as they called it, Wolverine and Captain America : Weapon Plus #1?
Jesus Christ.
It was a mouthful.
Yes, I did read it. I enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah, I reviewed it. I didn't give it the highest score, but I recognized that it was a fight comic and that it's trying to connect some dots.
With a lot of monologuing in there.
Yes,
but if you like true. Phantom X, it's kind of fun. Anyway.
Yeah, it makes me think he's not really, well, he's probably not really dead, right?
Yeah. Well, God, do you want to get into some comic shit? Because Xavier's in his body. So, I don't know.
I know what's going to happen. Xavier's going to impregnate someone, and then the baby will be Phantom X. I mean, it actually makes some sense in the comic world.
Yeah, it does.
So at the end of Weapon Plus, there is a bit of a teaser for what may come next. And I think it's 5 more one-shots.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Is that right? And the symbols suggest specific characters like Man-Thing, I believe Venom, right?
Yeah, it's one of the spiders for sure. It's
it could be Scarlet.
It could be Ben Reilly. It could be Kane.
You're right.
Obviously,
you're
both Scarlet Spider. It's not Venom's eyes exactly, which is all that the logo is. But also Venom is referenced earlier in the issue on a chalkboard.
Right.
Which ties into V-Nom, the Venom spinoff, where they reveal that Venom was a S.H.I.E.L.D. project under Nick Fury. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Are you hyped for this?
I think it's all going to depend on the execution.
Mm-hmm.
The idea from the outside looking in is so, so obnoxious to me. I don't think that everything needs to be connected. It really bothers me that everything is connected. I don't think that there's a lot of similarities between characters like the Stepford Cuckoos and Weapon X,
mm-hmm.
or even Captain America or Phantom X or any of them.
Right.
To that point, right? And then you get into really weird ones like Nuke and Cyber and stuff. And like, it's just weird to me that they're kind of pulling down these A-list characters by tying their creation story or origin story into something that seems
convoluted.
Yeah, like it serves plot more than character, right?
I was pleasantly surprised that Cap's backstory wasn't necessarily rewritten or anything.
Right.
He just served as an inspiration for a character.
Yeah.
That ends up being awful.
But I guess I would say that the level of execution in this first issue warmed me to the idea.
Did you catch the hint that there's going to be a Weapon XXX?
I did not.
I think the main bad guy there, he mentions it near the end, and I was like, no, you're not doing that, are you?
Oh, boy.
You saw what was in the giant vat at the end, right?
Yes.
Spoilers, there's like a giant red monster thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be Thunderbolt, right?
I don't know. Yeah.
I think it's Red Hulk. And that's ultimately how I felt. I was like, all right, let's see if there is some sort of grand design here. Because they are implying that Luke Cage and Venom and other characters like that are connected to it. So that could really split either way for me. But I was pleasantly surprised by the first issue.
So DC Comics is revealing their grand design with two new Joker series coming out later this year. One in October both in October. Right around, that's weird. Right around when the Joker movie comes out. That's so, what a coincidence.
Why would they do that?
So what's cool about these two reveals, even if you are sick of Joker, or you will be sick of Joker by November, what is interesting is that the creative teams are captivating, in my opinion.
Yes.
So there's one series written by Jeff Lemire, who is at this point like a beloved writer who pretty much everything he does is amazing.
Yeah.
All right? I mean, Gideon Falls.
I mean, he's beyond reproach, pretty much, as far as I'm concerned. Black Hammer, Gideon Falls.
Yeah.
I mean, so much stuff. We could just list his Wikipedia page, but yeah, especially with Andrea Sorrentino, the artist.
As the artist,
Gideon Falls. So that's really exciting. And that's a Black Label book called Joker Killer Smile.
which is pretty cool. I mean, I don't know. This, if I'm not mistaken, is the only the first superhero-related DC Black Label book in a while that they've announced, because everything else has been like fantasy and horror unrelated to superheroes.
Yeah. So it is cool to see that they're still continuing the label in that tradition, because that's ostensibly what it was for in the beginning.
Right.
I also like that they are expanding the palette with stuff like those fantasy series, but yeah.
And I mean, let's be honest, people are going to be expecting Gideon Falls, but with Joker, right? I mean, probably yeah. Very thought provoking, psychological, but also visually just so stimulating with layouts and.
Yeah. Gideon Falls is one of the best designs books I've ever seen. And the Joker Killer Smile cover is really cool. So
it is. It
speaks to that same kind of dedication and effort and intentionality.
DC's aware that the movie may bomb, but the comics won't.
Yeah.
Also coming out is The Joker Year of the Villain number 1, which is one of the one-shots that they're putting out with villain-centric books. Tom Taylor's doing one for Black Mask 2, who I will be speaking with next week about that. Anyway, this is coming out October 9th. It's a 40-page one-shot for $5, but guess who's writing it? You'll never guess. Ah, how'd you know?
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix. That's how you pronounce his name.
They got him for the book.
Actually, I'm not too far off, because this person is from filmmaking. John Carpenter is co-writing with Anthony Birch, who did...
Anthony Birch wrote Borderlands, the game.
And the art will be by Philip Tan and Mark Deering. So he wrote a pretty badass game that people love.
Yeah, absolutely. With a lot of really good topical humor and stuff. So right. Hopefully that's the angle they're going for.
I mean, Carpenter, you know, obviously he's got some great horror ideas, or he has had a lot of great horror ideas. So maybe it'll be a match made in heaven, because Birch can add a little humor and chaos to the maybe more twisted nature of Carpenter. Who knows?
Sure, yeah.
It's kind of interesting, though, seeing as these guys don't normally write superhero comics or supervillain comics in this case, and yet they're going to be teaming up on this one.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I sometimes feel weird about what is so obviously a cash grab, doesn't seem like the right word for it. A top billing that I don't think indicates the people that are actually working on the book.
Uh-huh.
With John Carpenter being before Anthony Birch, because Anthony Birch has a really well-recognized writing career. But Carpenter doesn't. Although I love John Carpenter, I'm just kind of like, it makes me feel the same way that the J.J. Abrams Spider-Man book does.
Sure, yeah. I mean, he's known probably more for his composing than for writing.
Yeah. And the thing is, in my top three movies of all time, I'm not saying I don't like John Carpenter. I'm just saying, compared to someone like Joe Hill, who has his own Hill House series, you know, that he's writing a number of books... That feels mm-hmm. much more authentic and believable to me, that he's actually putting in the effort rather than someone's name being attached to it.
Well, we'll see how it comes out. You know who else is coming out? San Diego Comic-Con next week.
Yeah, coming up.
And in the news, they've extended their deal with San Diego proper, the town, the city, the place, for 3 more years.
Yes.
So get your pocketbooks open, folks, because they're going to be there till 2024.
Yeah. This has more controversy attached to it than I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
I expected the controversy to be around the fact that they recently trademarked or copyrighted the Comic-Con name.
Right.
So at some point there's going to be a shift in the con circuit when Emerald City Comic-Con, Rose City Comic-Con, New York City Comic-Con, all of those have to change their names or pay mm-hmm. some sort of licensing fee.
Right.
But, this controversy is largely about the fact that Comic-Con in San Diego isn't large enough, that some organizers have expressed their worries about the convention center being too small to host all the visitors and exhibitors who wish to attend. Currently, the number of attendees is capped at 135,000. Next year, the city will hold a public vote to determine whether a larger convention center could be financed by increasing San Diego's hotel tax. And that's from a piece on CBR.com.
I can say firsthand, since I've been to San Diego Comic-Con 2 years in a row now for AIPT,
mm-hmm.
They definitely aren't thinking about how many people are in that place. No one is like, I don't think anyone is being turned back. And there have been, especially on Saturdays, it can feel like you're being crushed by people. There's so many.
Right. And that just doesn't seem sustainable to me. I don't even know that it seems 3 years worth of sustainable to me.
Yeah. They might have to, I mean, it would make sense if they removed a few of the vendor booths just to create more space. It's really just in the center of the space where it gets really tight, because there is like more people like leaving on the edges, you know.
Sure.
But I've never been to New York Comic Con. I want to go because I think it's actually physically bigger.
Emerald City Comic Con is also pretty large. I mean, it takes place on a couple of like four floors in the Seattle Convention Center, so that makes a lot of sense as well.
And then FanCon or whatever, Fan Expo in Boston, what used to be Boston Comic Con until they got sued.
Right.
They just, about a year ago, I think, they moved to a new location across the street, and it's ginormous. They can't even fill the space.
Well, and I guess they're maybe worried about that looking bad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's so good for you, San Diego. We're so full. All your businesses are going to get money. It helps the economy, blah, 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 blah. But like, there's at some point those parallel lines meet, right?
Right. So every week we talk about the top books of last week, where our parallel lines, our opinions, so to speak, come together, and we talk at each other about what we like. And sometimes Forrest tells me I'm wrong.
Yep.
This really does happen. You know what? I need to start talking down to you. I need to be like, hey,
I think the fact that you haven't means I have unapproachable taste.
Oh my God, you're right. It's not because we disagree. It's because you're so right.
Yeah. Right.
So in this segment, we give our top two books that we read in the last week, just recommending the books that you should pick up, because, you know, the show's on Sunday. If you haven't gotten your books yet, or if you ever want to go back to the shop again, you should get these books if you haven't already. We also talk about the top rated critic pick and fan pick based on Comic Book Roundup's comicbookroundup.com's ratings, their aggregate. And Forrest, I can't tell what is what on this sheet. Is Second Coming number one a fan, or yes, is it a critic pick?
Second Coming number one with a 9.5 is the fan pick.
Ah.
And then Wonder Twins number six with a 9.2 is the critic pick.
Hold on, wait a minute. Let me put some boom in it. Are both of those written by Mark Russell?
Are they?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they are. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
A good week.
I know Wonder Twins is drawn by Stephen Byron, and Second Coming is drawn by Richard Hache. Yeah, he's had a monster week. It's kind of fascinating to me that his comics are funny, and they're very much on the nose with cultural commentary. Mm-hmm. And it makes me wonder, like, are people hungry for that more than ever? I don't know.
Yeah, I think as long as it's smart, right?
And he is.
And we talk about this frequently. Like, as long as it doesn't feel like it's punching down, I think people are still receptive to that. There's obviously a crowd that doesn't want, quote, politics in their comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that the average consumer is that worried about that.
Not the average bear.
Yeah.
Our reviewer, Ritesh, has been reviewing Wonder Twins from the very beginning. And I think he's given almost every issue a 10 out of 10.
Yeah. It's a popular book. So popular that they extended it.
Oh, that's right. Which we talked about on this very show. Yeah.
And Dial H for Hero, I believe, was extended too.
And then our reviewer, Vishal, actually gave Second Coming number one a 10 out of 10. So, you know.
There you go.
Apparently, the reviewers at AIPTComics.com know what they're talking about.
I have seen some interesting pushback to Second Coming, but maybe that's an issue for another time.
Ooh, is it because of the religious stuff?
It's not that there are religious people saying it's inappropriate to make fun of religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's more that it is, well, I've seen non-religious people calling this out as well, that the book takes a message that is, it's inherently bad to be religious.
Huh, I didn't get that when I read it.
So I've seen some interesting commentary about that, and I'll compile something that expresses those ideas a little bit better, especially after I've read the issue.
But is it possible that we live in a society where people get offended too easily?
I think it's possible that we live in a society where opinions are wildly different. Mm-hmm. And need to be contextualized.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't speak to the getting offended too easily part.
So what is your second pick, Second Coming?
My second first pick. My second pick is Venom number 16, written by Donny Cates with art by Juan Guedon. I'm sure no one expected that. It's really, really good. It's really cool. It is after War of the Realms, but they summarize War of the Realms well enough that I don't think you necessarily need to go back and read those issues unless you want to. But it follows Eddie trying to rationalize or deal with the fact that the symbiote is no longer attached to him. And Donny Cates tweeted out that specifically what he was trying to do was ape the way that someone feels when they've lost a loved one. And they think about what a loved one would say about a specific situation, or they have a lot of memory or emotional triggers tied to a specific person. And in that sense, you do get Eddie is imagining that he's wearing the symbiote and attacking people. But then it very quickly cuts away to Eddie's bare, bloody knuckles, right? And so this sense that he's so empowered by the relationship of him and the symbiote that he doesn't know how to deal without it, and he can't visualize himself as someone separate from the symbiote anymore, is really, really interesting to me. And I think furthermore, like, speaks to the loved ones angle that Donnie's said he's trying to pull out of it in an interesting way, and in a way that kind of shouts down the people that said Donnie is wrong for not having a loving relationship between the symbiote and Eddie, because this issue makes it very apparent that Donnie does think that that's true, and just shows it and meets it out in a different way.
I reviewed this one for AIPT, and I liked it too. I did get a little confused when he was like venomizing.
Sure.
if that's a correct way to say it. Just because I was like, wait, does he have the symbiote? No, he doesn't. I don't know. I thought they could have done a little bit of better job visualizing that, but that's probably my stupidity, if anything.
Sure. I mean, I saw that he did have to clarify on Twitter a couple times that that's what was happening. So I didn't think it was necessarily as confusing as the Free Comic Book Day lead-in to Absolute Carnage, mm-hmm. which I had to read twice to get the trick there. This one was a little bit clearer to me. And I think especially when contextualized by what Donnie was trying to do, where you're imagining a loss to loved one's thoughts and opinions and stuff in real life. So, yeah.
Giant Size Ecstatics, number one, by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred, is my second favorite book last week. It's actually the first time we've seen the Ecstatics team, I think, unless they've been like little minor roles, since like 2004, I want to say. The series lasted about a year or two under Milligan and Allred, and they got a chance to bring the characters back, or the ones that are still alive, including Dupe, everyone's favorite, who is the cameraman for the team. And this issue, first of all, Mike Allred, I'm a huge fan of Mike Allred's. If you don't like his art, you might not like this issue, because obviously it's very colorful and expressive.
Expressive and exaggerated and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's a character called Fatty that might offend some, although I think the whole point of her is to talk about body image and how it's okay to be any type of body type. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that point as well.
That's what I thought. But yeah. I was a little worried though when I saw it. I was like, someone's gonna be offended by this. But I reviewed this for the site and I gave it a high. I think it was the highest score I gave this week, a 9.5 out of 10. And at the end, spoilers, but at the end there is there's some hype for a new series and it should be fun. I think it's gonna be a focus on a super villain team and. A lot of the characters on this team, I think, are brand new. Not all of them, but some of them. And they are adequately weird and wacky, which is what Ecstatics is all about, I think. We talked about this last week when I had put it on my list for most anticipated book.
Yeah.
Because this book in particular really shows weirdness with mutants. And, I mean, we're talking powers like vomiting and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Which isn't very, very sexy and appealing for a broader audience, which is why I think a lot of people like it, and it's a bit of a darling. Anywho, I recommend you check that out. But really, really, you really, really need to check out Force number one pick.
I think that they do. I think that you do, true believer, dear listener. And I'm Banky. My number one pick is Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 8, written by Saladin Ahmed with art by Javier Garon. This issue changes the trajectory of the current Miles Morales series for the better. And in a way that I think really speaks to the individual strengths of these creators, it takes a pretty hard left turn into a sci-fi horror story after Miles was kidnapped at the end of the 7th issue. It is not a upbeat, light, heroic story by any means. It's, I think, really about the different ethos of these characters meeting each other for the first time and about expanding Miles's rogues gallery, which I find inherently interesting anyway, in a very appropriate way that feels like a villain was specifically crafted to be against everything that Miles is. He's imprisoned in a laboratory by a creature, automaton, alien, I'm not really sure, called the Assessor. And Miles is all about companionship and compassion, and his personality is really big. I mean, he was an introvert under Brian Michael Bendis, but under Ahmed, he's really big, and he's got a nice, really strong swagger that I like quite a bit. The Assessor has none of that. The Assessor says stuff like, the subject will go to sleep at 4 p.m. The subject will comply. The subject's family will be used as collateral. Like, all sorts of stuff like that. It just totally sucks the character ability of Miles out of the room in a way that doesn't feel like, oh, well, this book has two different tones going on, but rather that it's very intentional. Then you get to the art where they're doing these really interesting things with sharply defined panels when the lights are on Miles, like spotlights. But then when the lights turn off, because he's left in this gurney for a time, the darkness kind of is much softer and wraps around him. And Miles is crying and saying that he wants to go home and stuff. And I just, it's been a really, really long time since I've seen a narrative and an art mimic the themes that they're going for so well, and also act as a good conversation with each other this well. It's just really, really impressive and considered and so intentional, and I love it very much. I've been waiting for this book to take a weird, kind of scary, heady sci-fi bent since Saladin started writing it. He's a great novelist. I also really love Black Bolt, and Javier is a great, great artist to match.
Did you review this for the site? You did, right?
I did. I gave it a 10 out of 10.
What? That's a lot.
All positives and no negatives.
I really liked the use of gutters, mm-hmm. black space around the panels. It got really dark. You know, whenever you see that much black in a comic book, you wonder, God, is there enough ink in the world for this? But
yeah,
it was really well done, the layout design. It was, one might say it was sparse, but on purpose. And yes. That created a sense of like hopelessness, I think.
Yeah, it's not a story that I would recommend to readers under like 16.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty dark and oppressive, but so intentionally.
Which is interesting because a lot of the issues prior, I felt, were very kid-friendly, like when he teamed up with Rhino and stuff.
Yeah. Well, Saladin actually tweeted out, hey, this book, this particular issue gets a little dark, and there's a two-page splash depicting various implements of torture. You may want to look at it before you give it to your kid.
Ah, nice.
So I think that's really cool. They know.
What was the villain's name again?
The Assessor.
So that would be a sick name for an actuary.
Yeah, true.
I am the Assessor.
Yeah.
Nice. I haven't read it yet. I only flipped through it after you told me how awesome it was.
I did. I was very excited. Yeah.
So my number one pick, you're not going to guess it. It's Second Coming number one. Which was the fan pick, right? It was the fan pick?
It was.
This is from Ahoy, which is a newer publisher. They started last fall, so they've almost reached a year. And this book is particularly personal, in a sense, to me, because I got to interview Mark Russell at San Diego Comic-Con last year about this book when it was a DC Vertigo book. And he had some really interesting things to say about his approach and about religion in general. So then after this interview, I went and picked up, he's written two books basically rewriting the Bible, but sort of calling out some of the more ridiculous things in it and sort of making light of how it's contradictory and awful, you know, people like cutting off 500 foreskins of men for some reason because God says so, stuff like that. Anyway, so I can totally see why he's coming out with Second Coming. And when I was reading it, it reminded me of the books that he's read. And what's interesting is it's mixing superheroes and religion, right? And there's some interesting visual interpretations of what happens in the Bible, which I showed you right before the show.
Yes.
And like, for instance, it's not really a spoiler because it's like on page two, but the what is it? The tree of life? What is it called in the Garden of Eden?
The fruits in the Garden of Eden, yeah.
The fruits in the Garden of Eden are shaped like penises and vaginas. Peaches and, I guess, bananas? I don't know.
Eggplant?
Very weird looking. Yep. Anyway, that's the kind of humor that's in this book. God is depicted as a kind of a old curmudgeon boss of sorts who's kind of sick of the children that he's created and all of our whining and problems. And in it, his son Jesus... So basically the first like eight pages recounts a lot of the Bible where God, you know, sent water to drown us and sent Jesus, or Jesus actually decides to go himself. Anyway, I think what's interesting, this is a bit of a spoiler, but I think what's interesting about this is it actually, so Jesus, I don't think goes back to earth. I don't think, because he comes back after he was crucified, and then the book cuts to superheroes, this Superman type character who's actually got a reporter wife. And there's a subplot in there about Superman and his, or not Superman, but the Superman type guy and his wife wanting to adopt children, which I found surprising. I did not expect something like that. And it kind of goes in deep about adoption and how hard it is, but also how not romantic it is, how not
easy.
It's ugly, I suppose. It's sure. An ugly sort of process. And I really can't wait to see where it's going. It was a longer issue, too. I think it was like 40 pages or a little bit less than that, maybe. Basically, it ends with Jesus hanging out with a superhero. And it's playing around with how in superhero comics, superheroes punch things to solve problems. Whereas if you read the Bible, Jesus isn't about violence, right? He's about healing and trying to get a message across to people so they'll change on their own. Whereas the Superman-like figure is punching robots and they're screaming like, please stop, no. And they're like groaning and he's just like, ha, you want some more? There's definitely a juxtaposition between the two. And I'm very curious to see how they might teach each other things.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation to have on a meta-narrative level because it's a book so informed by, or a book that's unpacking how a lot of heroism is based around traditionally Western religious values, but that they're also so far from that.
Yeah.
So, like you were saying about the punching.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people are having problems with it because of the way it's approaching religion, but knowing Mark Russell's background, talking to him for 40 minutes about religion in general, I think he's very informed and has a specific opinion. And I don't think this is necessarily an anti-religion book, but that's just my take. And sure. That's just after reading the first issue.
Yeah.
I didn't actually review it, but if I did, I probably would have given it a high score.
Yeah. I think we should come back around to it after I've read it and talk about it some more, because it is one of the more interesting books to have come out in like the last year, I would say.
Yeah. Those were our favorite books from last week. Now it's time to get to business, the real business, Forrest's real business.
Yes.
It's we're going to be talking. So every week this month, we're going to be talking Spider-Man for Spider-Man Month or Spider Month, Spectacular Spider Month. And this week we will be ranking the Spider-Man villains.
Yeah.
And I believe Forrest has a like science on how we're going to do this.
Basically, I have a list of villains, and I'm going to, for each one, ask you if you think they would be in the A tier, the B tier, or the C tier, or not tiered at all.
Whoa.
Below C tier.
Are you also rating them?
I can. I was mostly thinking that I would just get really upset if you were wrong.
Okay, cool. And then can you give me a definition of or an idea of what each tier kind of means?
I would say that the A tier is characters that are essential to Spider-Man's life or to his rogues gallery. If a writer or artist didn't bring them into a Spider-Man run that was longer than 50 issues, you would be surprised.
Okay.
B tier is characters that have very good or very specific stories or arcs that you like or think are very memorable. I think a great example of that would be Kraven's Last Hunt.
Okay.
And C tier is characters that have one particular trait that you think elevates them, right? Mm-hmm. So there's obviously a number of different goblins, but Green Goblin is so essential to Spider-Man that I would argue that he's in the A tier, whereas Hobgoblin and Demogoblin are probably in the C tier.
Wow. Wow. This is going to be controversial.
So I do have a list of some of the most famous and popular Spider-Man villains.
So you're not going to go with like Lorna Dodson, the rabbit, the white rabbit chick? Is she going to get...
A Living Brain is on here.
Oh, okay.
A living robot that is designed to solve any problem. Oh, cool. The very essential thing is that I think Spider-Man has the best rogues gallery of all time. Mm-hmm. I think Batman is like neck and neck with him, but I would say Spider-Man wins out.
Okay.
And that's largely because I think what's important about Spider-Man is that his problems affect his personal life.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Batman's problems are Batman's problems.
Right.
Spider-Man's problems are Spider-Man and Peter Parker's problems.
Okay. Yeah, true.
So let's get into it and see if we agree that these characters are threats to both Spider-Man and Peter Parker, or they're good foils to the character or anything like that. The first one is Chameleon.
Ugh, God. I would put him at C. I would put him at C. C level. I've never been that interested in him. He's always used more like a gangster than a villain that has a power that's worth talking about. I know that he has this chameleon power where he can change his face and stuff, but he definitely suits Spider-Man for the 60s, you know, for like the Soviet era.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would agree with C in general as well. He's got some...
I'm sweating over here.
He's got some different aspects, and he's got some different characterizations that would maybe elevate him. There's some really good Superior Spider-Man stuff with him where he's like really gross and cuts people's faces off and wears them.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, no, there's a little bit more to it than man who can be anyone. But aside from that, or outside of that particular instance, not that great. Vulture.
Oh, God. Yeah. He's number one. I mean, A.
A. Yeah. Absolutely.
He's one of the first villains he fought, right? Which issue did he show up? Do you know?
Number two.
Yeah.
May 1963.
Because you and I are both a little bit younger, we didn't experience Spider-Man when it was first coming out, obviously.
Right.
And
yeah. The first stories that I read were J. Michael Straczynski.
I don't know who wrote the Vulture stories that I liked, but it was Mark Bagley drawing, and it was where Vulture was like sucking the youth out of Spider-Man. And those really stuck with me. And then, of course, you know, as you get older and you start reading all the stories, you start to read the Sinister Six and you see how important he is. I mean, he's always kind of been like a crotchety old man, which I've never really liked. It's like simplifying him.
Yeah. Blackie is younger. Blackie Drago.
Uh-huh.
A good character for Spider-Man Blue. But I would agree for Adrian.
Which you have him at A?
Yes, absolutely. Essential. I think Vulture generally shows up within the first 20 issues of someone's run.
Huh, interesting.
Tinkerer.
He's a Spider-Man villain?
Yeah. Also showed up in number two.
Oh, really? Yeah. So that is the Thing's stepdad, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, it's funny, as I was just... He showed up in a Silver Surfer trade I just recently was reviewing. He was depicted really well in it. This was like late 96, I think, 97. But as far as Spider-Man villain, I would put him at C tier.
I would put him below.
Below
I don't think
C-tier.
He's necessarily a villain in his own right. He's usually helping someone else. Doc Ock.
I would put Doc Ock, obviously, A tier.
Yes. Yeah.
Do we even need to talk about that?
We're going to talk about it a little bit more when we get to another character.
Uh-oh.
Sandman.
Sandman. A tier.
Okay.
I think...
Yeah. Original Sinister Six.
Yep. And... Yep. He's been humanized really well over the years.
Yes. The Chip Zdarsky stories in Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man are amazing.
He's a character that makes sense for Spider-Man, too, because he's capable of, you know, holding him tight, right? Like, taking him out of the sky and potentially, like, drowning him.
Yeah, it's a very good power foil. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
Lizard.
Oh, God. I've never really liked Lizard. I'm going to put him B. I'm going to put him B tier.
I think Lizard is A tier for me. I'm not mad at B tier. I think the really interesting thing about Lizard is that Lizard doesn't know he's Kurt Connors, but Kurt Connors knows he's the Lizard.
Uh-huh.
And there's always interesting stories to come out of that where Spider-Man is typically being symmetrical to that and saying, at what point am I Spider-Man? At what point am I Peter Parker? And stuff like that. Is this a Spider-Man problem or is this a Peter Parker problem? I'm friends with Kurt, but the lizard needs to be put away.
Uh-huh.
And what would Peter do when he's friends with someone like this versus what would Spider-Man do, which is, yeah, put him away without question. So I think that that's really interesting and probably, when done well, elevates him to the A tier.
So I've always kind of considered him like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, right?
I think he absolutely is. Yeah.
I do like the fact that, you know, I like the idea of him using like lizard DNA or whatever to regrow his hand or arm.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It just always was so simplistic to me. And I mean, it's just a monster for Spider-Man to fight. I don't know. It never really did it for me.
Okay. Electro.
Electro! Oh, that was a Jamie Foxx impression. I would put him at C tier.
I would too.
Oh,
least
thank God.
Interesting Sinister Six. Mysterio.
Ugh, Mysterio's a hard one. Because he just was in that movie we just saw.
Yeah, it was so good.
God, he's another one that's hard because I don't know if he's ever been done that well. I don't really like what they did with him in Old Man Logan either. Or Dead Man Logan, for that matter. I'm going to put him at C tier.
I think that's fair. I think what drops him from B tier to C tier for me is all the really confusing stuff about Beck and Klum and Demon Mysterio and stuff. It's like the most comic book shit I can possibly think of.
Right. And I mean, his powers are quite interesting because they require Spider-Man to like use his sense, and also it makes him confront his own demons, right?
Right. Yeah.
He's like the Scarecrow of Spider-Man's rogues gallery.
Absolutely. And I think that that's why he's important to be in the tiers at all. But man, trying to unpack all those twists and turns of him dying and coming back and stuff is a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Green Goblin.
A tier, obviously.
A. is he Spider-Man's arch enemy or is Doc Ock?
Oh, man. You know, it's funny that you asked that question because I was thinking recently, like, there was a period where Venom was his arch enemy.
Yes. And there the best Spider-Man comics of all time.
And then there was a period where Green Goblin was, even Hobgoblin was his arch enemy for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think Doc Ock is definitely up his number one right now. Because of what Dan Slott did with Superior Spider-Man, I can't see another villain being more of his, like, ultimate foil, especially if you read the classic comics. Doc Ock was messing with Aunt May, like one of the first villains to do so, where he was like showing up at her house and like being like, don't do anything, Peter, or I'll tell her who you are, you know, like shit like that.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? Is he the arch nemesis?
It's Goblin for me. And it's largely because of Gwen Stacy.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
There are very few hard and fast rules about who stays dead in comics.
Mm-hmm.
But Gwen has been dead and will stay dead. And Spider-Man Blue is one of my most favorite comics of all time, probably my most favorite Spider-Man comic too. And the fact that that is just so intensely drawn from the death of Gwen Stacy elevates Green Goblin for me.
And he's a lot like Joker, so.
Yeah. Kraven.
Kraven's A, for sure.
Really?
Like you said before, the what was this? The Last Hunt.
Yes, I would say that Kraven is B for me because the Last Hunt is kind of the only thing that you can point to.
But he's so unique of all of his villains. Like, does any other hero have a hunter villain?
I'm not sure. I think Batman has a poacher villain.
Poacher villain. There you
yeah,
go.
But still, Kraven. I kind of feel like. The Last Hunt, as much as I loved it, I literally reread it today.
It's not as good as you thought it was?
I think it ruined the character.
Of Spider-Man or?
Or Kraven.
Ah.
I think that The Last Hunt is so good that everything that's come out after it is just a remix or retelling of The Last Hunt.
Right.
And that has really pulled the character down, in my opinion.
I just love the idea of this like jungle warrior in New York City. I think that works really well.
Yeah.
Which is why Kazar meeting with Peter Parker was such an awesome issue.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm not mad at A. I think he's a really important character. He's just not my favorite.
As long as you're not mad.
Scorpion.
Ugh, Not even on the list. Get him out of there.
Getting him out of there.
He's working for Jameson, and like he doesn't even care. Like he's just making money, and his powers are stupid. Even when he had the acid shooting later on, like in the late 90s or whatever, that was stupid too.
When Matt Gargan, Scorpion, is Venom, is my least favorite Venom story.
I bet.
It's just nothing.
Such a lame villain. And yet he's one of the like main ones you think of when you think of him.
For sure. Absolutely. He's got a silly costume.
I'm surprised a few others haven't shown up yet in this list. Have you been asking in a certain order?
I am using the list of Spider-Man enemies list from Wikipedia.
Okay.
So I think that this was chronological appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Rhino.
He's B. He's definitely B.
Yeah. Okay.
He's not, I mean, he's good, but then you try to think of all the best Rhino stories and there really isn't any.
Yeah.
He's very one note.
I agree. Kingpin.
He's a daredevil villain. Get out of here.
He's a daredevil villain. Yeah. C. He's a daredevil villain. He's a good villain. But he's a daredevil villain. Jackal.
A tier.
A. So important. So important.
One word, clones.
Informs everything about Ben and Kane as well.
I what do you think, though? What's the better form for him? The green gremlin or the human?
The gremlin.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really speaks to the, like, this guy's going to fuck with your body.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care. I would say the green jackal, A tier.
Mm-hmm.
Hobgoblin.
Okay, so he's A tier for me.
Okay.
I loved what Slott did with him. Obviously, oh God, what's the story from the 80s that was iconic? The Hobgoblin Saga.
That would do it. I would say C tier.
C tier?
I would probably also put Ben and Kane in C tier. So, I don't know. Clones of a character.
I was born in September 30th, and I love Halloween. So, there you go. I win.
That works. Venom.
A tier.
A tier.
I mean, he's the
ultimate
foil. Is there
anything to talk about? Yeah.
He's a mirror of him. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's less often a villain, I guess, now.
Yeah, he's really a hero, yeah.
But I think sometimes, like, you get really invested in Venom as a kind of anti-hero, and then to see that twist or the knife turn where he falls and becomes a full-on villain again and hates Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is done so well because we've spent a lot of time with Venom as a hero.
Right.
Carnage.
C.
Okay. Really?
He's always just been Venom, but darker, right? More violent and more scary. He's just Venom Redux. I don't know. He's never been that interesting to me. Cletus is a psychopath. Obviously, Venom Eddie isn't, but it's not different enough for me to care.
Okay. I would say
B.
Venom is A, but Carnage is B. I love Maximum Carnage. Cletus has had a lot of like flip-flopping back and forth, good and bad stories since then, but Maximum Carnage is like right there for me. Again, that's like Last Hunt, though, where it's one particular story for a character.
Right.
Morlun.
That's a tricky one since he doesn't have that many stories or history. God, when he was reborn or whatever recently, I know you reviewed a few of those issues.
I did review all of Spider-Geddon.
I love the concept. I was actually, Spider-Verse was one of my favorite events in probably the last 10-15 years, but he's got to be C-tier.
C, yep. I think it's one story.
Yeah, and
or more particularly, it's one specific thing, which is him eating Spider-Man's eye.
Right.
Like, outside of that, and then you get into the Inheritors, which I like the idea of spider totems. I like the Inheritors. J. Michael Straczynski was the first Spider-Man book that I read. So it's always been really, really impactful for me. But it is really one note. Mr. Negative.
Oh, jeez. I've never really liked Mr. Negative. I'm going to go off the list.
Okay.
I mean,
Overdrive.
He was cool in the video game, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. I think the game is his best story so far.
Yeah. Where would you put him?
Off the list as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Overdrive.
You're not mad. Who the fuck is Overdrive?
Okay, off the list. A supervillain who can convert any vehicle into a high-powered one.
Nope.
What?
No.
Off. Done. Screwball.
Off the list.
The world's first live-streaming supervillain. Get out of here! Demo Goblin.
Yeah, again, it's like a mashup of evil goblins and I don't know. Yep. Off the list.
Yep. Boomerang.
Oh, God, it's so he's become more relevant recently because he's a roommate of Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's why I pulled him. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think he's on the list.
It depends on how this run ends, but I could see him being like C tier for me. Just that kind of like, remember when Spider-Man had a villain friend?
Right, you know, right.
That he was the worst roommate of all time.
Right.
Which is its own villainous ability.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's got some real good, real funny moments. I don't know that he's in the tiers yet, but I do like him. That's it.
What? No. Come on. Hold on.
Oh, there's plenty more. But
can I bring up a couple that I want to bring up?
Sure.
Morbius.
Okay. Yep.
B tier.
B. So above Morlun.
Hell yeah. Okay. I just love the idea that he's like, he's got this disease. I don't know.
I love the first appearance, the cover art. I think I spoke about that a few weeks ago. Actually.
You did, yeah. You so did,
he's like
yeah.
Backhanding Spidey with the six arms. That's really good.
What would you put him?
See, I know that Jared Leto's going to play him. And that makes me want to say off the list.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't want that to exist. B is fine.
Maybe C. Let's do a couple quick ones.
Yeah, go for it.
Swarm.
Off the list.
Okay. Spot.
It's so weird and ridiculous.
Yeah. I love the idea.
Off the list, but I love the idea.
It's such, every time a writer has a take on it, it's always like, wow, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. It's kooky weird, though. I would say off the list. He would be a great Doom Patrol villain.
That's true. Hammerhead.
Oh, boy, I hate him.
All right, Carrion.
Oh,
see? See, again, I was reading Mark Bagley, Amazing Spider-Man, and he was like a big deal for a little while, so I might put him at C, too. Yeah. How about Shriek?
Off the list.
Tombstone.
C.
All right, and the one I can't believe you did not say this one.
Uh-huh.
Shocker.
Oh, I miss Shocker.
Yeah.
I mean, with Shocker and Electro, do we really have to do that?
Yeah, you're right. he's a lot like Rhino and Sandman. He's just kind of a criminal with no backstory. Well, not Sandman, but you know what
really
I mean.
Really important, famous character design.
Oh, sure.
Not interesting to me at all, though.
Yeah, he's pretty basic. He could someone like Tom King could take that character and like turn him into magic, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But I would say off the list until someone does something like that.
All right, I agree with that. And that concludes our ranking of the Spider-Man villains. If anyone wants to write all that down and tell us how we did, that'd be great.
Yeah.
In our next segment, Top Books for Next Week, we're going to tell you the number one book we're looking forward to, which we may or may not talk about next week when we review comics. Although I won't be on the show because I'm at San Diego Comic-Con. But anyway.
Yes, it will be me and Banksy.
Oh my God, but I thought you were Banksy.
I'm Banky.
Oh, you're Banky.
What a twist.
He said that like a superhero in a Silver Age comic. Anywho, what is your most anticipated book out next week?
The most anticipated book for next week for me is Age of X-Men Omega #1, written by Lonnie Naylor and Zach Thompson. This is going to wrap up everything that's been happening with Age of X-Men. I don't know if it's going to be good, but I sure as hell want to read it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's exciting that they do these Omega issues now, because they did one for War of the Realms, too.
Absolutely, and I think that this story still needs to be concluded. I have a lot of faith in these guys that they're going to do it well, but it depends on how well to see if it can recontextualize some of the misses in Age of X-Men for me.
Nice. My most anticipated book, I don't know if you've heard of it, Spider-Man Life Story #5. This is going to be set in the 2000s, so...
Yes.
Not too long ago, and what is Peter at now? 70? 60? 60 years old?
Yeah.
He's up there. He's up there. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be focused on Civil War, or what Civil War is in this universe.
Yeah, it's also focused on another character that we were just talking about. I don't know
Who's
if
that?
You've seen the preview.
No.
Morlun.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So Morlun's going to be somehow integrated into the Civil War in the Marvel Comics.
Probably, yeah.
What a mashup.
There's a really, really great page in the preview page where Morlun is draining the life out of Ben.
Ooh.
Ben Reilly. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. I think Chip Zdarsky and Mark Bagley might be the only people that I want to tell a Morlun story ever again.
Nice.
Like I was saying, I think that character's kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
But, ooh, it looks good. It gave me those feels that the original J. Michael Straczynski story did. So
was it a spider tingle?
It was a Peter tingle.
Peter Tingle. Got it. All right. Those are our number one books that we highly anticipate and probably will be awesome. In our next segment, Judging by the Cover Junior, we talk about cover art because artists don't get enough credit, man. And this is where we get to talk about it, or at least cover art in this specific way. And the best cover, in my opinion, coming out next week is by David Nakayama for Spider-Man City at War number 5. I think this is a variant cover. It's got our favorite Spider-Man villain, Scorpion. he's in the background, like, shooting his tail at Spider-Man, and Spider-Man is jumping right at us, and the textures of the suit, the detailing, the blurring of Scorpion's tail. This is an epic, epic cover. It's so cool. And you don't even need to be reading this series to be like, I want to pick this up. And On top of all of that, Spider-Man is completely outlined with this yellow, thick yellow line. And it just makes it pop so good. It's almost like a 3D image the way he's drawn it. And I bet you if it was to sell enough, they would make a 3D image version of this. It would really, his feet, the web, everything would just punch you in the face. It's really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. I need to check that book out. I haven't checked it out.
Very soon you need to, because we have the writer on the show.
We are going to have the writer on for Spectacular Spider-Man, Dennis, quote, Hopeless Hallam. So I need to check that out. My pick is Silver Surfer Black. This is a variant cover by Marcos Martin, and it is so, so cool. It's monochromatic or black and white. It's just black and white. I think there's maybe some grays in there, but...
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really cool side profile of Silver Surfer's face being completely split apart into these various segments, and then another full body profile of him dashing through the horizontal center of it. It's really evocative of space. It's really evocative of, like, negative space, and it obviously matches the name of the book so well that I normally prefer the cosmic stuff to be really kooky, weird, bright. I think Tradmore has done a fantastic job of that. I think the art in Dan Slott's Silver Surfer does a great job of that too, but to see this so stark and different from the way, like, Galactus and Silver Surfer are normally portrayed, I think speaks to what this particular story is about well enough that I'm like, all right, yeah, that's really, really cool.
Nice. Yeah, and you know, we're both excited for this book too.
Yes.
We'll be reading it.
We will be. Will you?
In our last segment, or in our second to last segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about San Diego Comic-Con, and I want to talk about what I'll be covering and panels I think you should go to if you get to go. And probably panels that I'll be covering, so you might be able to read about it on aptcomics.com. So I'm going Wednesday through Sunday, and looking through the schedule, there's some pretty sweet panels if you love comics. There's a lot of panels if you love the creation of comics, if you're involved in that. I highly recommend you go to those. But as far as, like, the hard-hitting comic news, there are two panels I recommend that are coming out on Thursday. One's at 1 p.m. It's Image Comics' Bone-Chilling Insight into the Best-Selling Horror Comic Books, which may or may not be true. But this one is going to have Maxwell Prince, Pornsack, how do you say his last name?
Tento, I think.
Yeah, there you go. Dan Waters, Jeff Lemire, Kieran Gillen, Chuck Brown. There's some heavy hitters in this panel. And it's particularly interesting to me that Image is doing this because obviously Hill House is coming out soon and DC is going to be the number one horror comic publisher that everyone will be talking about. Maybe not
by,
the number
by
one.
By volume, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then after that, at 3, there's a really cool panel with Robert Kirkman, who will be talking about all of his books. And I'm sure people will be like, why did you end Walking Dead just 2 weeks ago, you jerk? So I have a feeling since it's a Q&A style, it might get interesting.
Ooh, heated.
Yeah, and then Friday, Burger Books and the Writer's Room are going to have their own panel, which is pretty sweet. Burger Books.
Yes.
You know, that's the Dark Horse imprint within the imprint, or is it like a pop-up? What would you call it?
I think it's an imprint, a Dark Horse imprint by edited by Karen Berger of Vertigo fame.
Yep, she was the founder of Vertigo.
Yep.
This one will also have Jeff Lemire and a number of other guests. I'm hoping that they announce some new books. They've already announced a couple of books in the last week or two. So if you like indie storytelling, that's another one to check out. Then on Friday at 1:30 p.m., Spider-Man. Marvel's Big Spider-Man panel, where they have Nick Spencer and Frank Thierry, whoa, Sean McGuire. They're all going to be talking about their upcoming books. I went to the Spider-Man panel last 2 years, I think, and there usually is some interesting information. Last year it was all about Spider-Geddon.
Spider-Geddon.
As Niccolo would say over and over and over.
Sure.
So that's only two panels for Friday. Saturday has some pretty big panels. The DC Black Label is getting their own panel at 10 a.m., which will be really exciting because they've just started announcing books. Obviously, Jeff Lemire's Joker, which we talked about at the top of the show. I'm sure they're going to show some art. I'm sure it's going to get people even more jazzed for it. And then at 1:45, Marvel Comics' next big thing. This is probably the biggest panel at San Diego Comic-Con every year, in my opinion. And not just because it's Marvel. They really do pull out the stops. Is that the way to say it? And last year they were showing us stuff from Fantastic Four, which at the time we didn't even have a Fantastic Four book. So it felt really big and huge, even if Fantastic Four has been, you know, just okay. It felt huge at the time. I believe Donnie Cates was there too, and he showed us his Cosmic Ghost Rider tattoo.
That's awesome.
Which I tweeted, and it got like a zillion retweets. It was ridiculous. That guy's famous.
He's famous. That's true.
And then at 5:15, get on your computers Saturday, because Marvel Studios will be in Hall H. I think this is going to be the biggest thing of the week. The biggest. And unfortunately, I won't be able to go to that because you have to wait outside for 24 hours before to wait in line to get in. It's insane.
Jesus. Yeah.
I'm not going to waste a whole day just to get in. But this is going to be huge, I think, because they're going to be talking about their next wave. They have to be, right?
Absolutely. It's got to be announcements about who's in what and when it's coming out. It has to be. It can't be anything else.
Right. And another thing that's interesting about this is Marvel wasn't at San Diego Comic-Con last year. They did not premiere anything at Hall H. So it's kind of cool that they're back, because everybody was like, oh my God, is San Diego done? If Marvel gives up on them, they're done.
Right.
And then really quick.
I heard that someone is going to eat Tom Holland's eye on stage.
Oh my God. So, is his name Gorlin?
M. Gorlin.
Sunday has three panels that you should probably pay attention to. At 10 a.m., Dan Didio is going to be talking about DC Comics and what they're doing ahead of the next year. They're not doing a press breakfast like they always do, so this might be the only way to get the big news as far as their direction.
Interesting.
Jonathan Hickman will be doing a Q&A at 10 a.m. on Sunday.
Cast Hoxis Poxis.
So at the next big thing the day before, he's going to be at that as well, talking about X-Men. And then he's going to have his own Q&A. So that'll be interesting because, I mean, he won't be just talking about X-Men, obviously. He'll be talking about maybe his prior Marvel books, maybe East of West, maybe some of his other Image Comics books. It's a chance at the end of this convention to kind of rail Hickman and get some more information out of him. And then finally, at 11:15 on Sunday, Scott Snyder is going to have his spotlight panel, which he's been talking about for a while now because of all of his creator-owned books. He's going to be probably revealing more details on that. Considering he revealed details to me on this very podcast, he might reveal a lot. So everybody was talking on the 4th of July about the big book that Scott Snyder and Greg and Charles Soule are doing. Yes. Maybe more details will come out about that.
I think that they will, and I'll take that money when it ends up being named the Ark or Levies.
Yeah. We did make that bet.
I bet they listened to this podcast. We haven't named the book.
Yeah. There you go.
Snatch them up.
There you go. Snatch it up. One quick observation: Geoff Johns has always had a spotlight, at least the last 2 years, and he doesn't have one this year. And on top of all that, he was supposed to come out with his own imprint called Killing Zone in May, and that didn't even come out.
Yeah, and all his other books have been delayed, obviously, historically at this point.
So I'm sure he's really busy with DC Universe stuff. I know he was doing that, writing and directing that show, Stargirl, I think it was called?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So maybe he's just really busy, but it's a sign that I don't think he's necessarily doing comics as much, because why wouldn't they want to hype his stuff?
And when do they come out? When does the next Doomsday Clock come out?
Do you know off the top of your head? Because I don't.
No, it was delayed.
Again?
Yeah. I mean, welcome to our segment, Doomsday Clock Clock.
There you go.
Yeah.
Just really quick, just to tell you about my week a little bit, I'm going to be going to the Batman Hall of Fame and checking out all the cool, they have like a ride there, a VR ride that they're unveiling.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, there's going to be a statue that was designed by Todd McFarlane, stuff like that. I might get to interview Jim Lee. Who knows? Maybe not. And then throughout the week, I have all these interviews. I get to interview Joe Hill, which is going to be cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Tom Taylor, Kieran Gillen, Rainbow Rowell. I'll be able to talk to her.
Awesome.
Et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to be writing a lot. I'm not going to sleep. I'm going to come back sick.
Yeah, you are going to get the con crud.
Yeah. I'm hoping that I take it easy on Saturday because I don't have a lot. But by the time it's next Saturday, I probably have a lot to do.
Yeah, no doubt.
But yeah, if you if you're at the con, look for my T-shirt. I'll have an AIPT logo on my chest most days. And yeah, and check back at AIPTcomics.com for any news. And obviously, hit up our Twitter and other social media to see what we're up to.
Yeah, and I would imagine that the following show, hosted by myself and Banky, is going to be mostly news that you generate. So we're really, really excited for
oh,
that.
Oh, God. No pressure. I know Banky. He expects big. Go
oh,
big
yeah,
or go home.
He's a big, got a big ego.
If I don't, like, knock over the Batman statue, I'm fired.
Oh, God. That's a great one. Live action Banky. We are Banky.
It would be funny if, like, CNN was there and I'm like, Banky is God, and I just knock it over, and I'm like, AIPT, and everyone in the world will be like, what is AIPT, and what is Banky? And this show we're on right now will get a zillion hits.
Yes, sounds good to me.
So in our last segment, Off Topic Top Shelf, we talk about something that's not comic related, because I'm sure you're sick of it after listening for an hour and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So although one of these times I am going to pick Spider-Man, so sorry.
Oh, if you do that. Imagine if you put something really boring and then you switched it on me at the last second.
Nuclear war.
Wait, why do you like nuclear war, Forrest? What is your off-topic top shelf this week?
My off-topic for the week is a really, really simple pleasure. It's cold brew coffee. I tend to drink a lot of energy drinks, mostly because I don't really like hot coffee. It upsets my stomach. It makes me feel weird. I don't know. I also think I'm probably lactose intolerant, but cold brew seems to fix all of those problems for me. And it's such a simple, nice, refreshing drink. I think it works well on cold days as well as it does on really hot days. It's over 90 degrees here right now, and getting a cold brew coffee just, it really hits the spot for me. It doesn't.
Wait, where are you?
I'm in Eastern Washington.
Wait a minute, you're in Washington? Isn't that a place
Washington.
Where coffee? Isn't coffee like a big deal there?
Yeah.
What it a coincidence.
So we tend to get to test a lot of Starbucks stuff mm-hmm. before everyone else. I'm a big Ooh. Fan of their cold brew. I'm also a big fan of Dutch Bros cold brew. There's just a lot to like about it. And in the same sense that I think cold brew gets reduced down to just being cold coffee, but it really mm-hmm. has as much depth and as many different styles as regular coffee does. Mm. So if you like that, you know, in the same way that you might be a sommelier or something, I don't know what that's called for a coffee person, but I'm
Cafayer.
Sure I'm sure there's a title. Cold brew is just as enriching, and it's so, so refreshing. I really enjoy getting one.
You know, what's funny is I actually buy those cold brew Starbucks container thingies
at the
supermarket.
The glass ones?
I'm so lazy, I don't want to have to brew it.
Are they the glass containers? Is that what
you're No, the plastic ones.
Okay. A interesting small fast story is that when I was a Boy Scout, I was part of a troop that was known as the prank troop. Mm-hmm. And we went to Boy Scout camp and we almost got kicked out because we did so many pranks. But my friend Zach showed me that you can leave a little bit of liquid in one of those glass Frappuccino containers mm-hmm. and blow into it, like take the lid off and blow into it really hard and then close it. And if you toss it in a fire,
oh no,
it takes off like a rocket. Huh. It shoots straight up into the air. Which is obviously not something that Boy Scouts should be doing, nor should anyone, but it was a lot of fun at the time.
Why did it do that? Do you know?
It's got to be something with the pressure.
I was a Cub Scout, and I didn't do anything like that.
Yeah, you didn't have fun.
We
had fun.
Like really tiny.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of our show, which wasn't tiny. And I hope you liked it. If you did, you could hit the like button on Apple I don't even know. You know, we never talk about Spotify, but we're on there too.
We're on everything. You can get us on Overcast. You can get us on Spotify. Simplecast. You can check out AIPTComics.com where we post it as well. Mm-hmm. We're on everything. Actually, if you put your ear to the ground and listen hard enough, you'll probably hear us.
And at the same time, look up in the sky, and if you see a cloud, that's us. It's Smoke Signal.
That's us. Mm-hmm. That's us. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.